There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Do you have any thoughts about movie musicals, Sarah?
Sure, yeah. I love musicals. I have a lot of thoughts about movie musicals. And in general, I think they're better animated.
Oh, okay.
That's mm-hmm. my overall hot take.
Yeah. Like Disney sort of perfected something, or even just all animated musicals are stronger than... like than what a live action could be.
You know, I'm thinking about why I think this, and I'm realizing right now I just prefer animation in general.
Yeah,
especially with a musical, which takes place in such a heightened reality. I feel like animation is just perfectly suited for it, because if it's on the stage, you get the inherent, like, you know, the inherent distancing, the inherent acceptance of, like, yeah, okay, I got to use my imagination a little bit. But movies, I'm way less forgiving.
Right.
I never liked musicals. I wasn't a musical person. Yeah, it's just that I find just Broadway something that was never accessible to me. When, you know, because I'm from New York City, so to go to an actual Broadway show was impossible. That's just something you could not do.
That's real.
And when I went to when I was in high school and they had the productions, it was something that I was like, I don't want to get involved in this, because it was never something that I was interested in. But like, normal Americana is Disney movies, which are musicals.
Right.
So I do love them. And then as I've, you know, just being a queer person, you can't fucking avoid musical theater majors. And so I started, you know, I was like, well, I'll watch this bullshit. I'll watch this bullshit. And I was like, okay, all right, you're right. This is actually very good. But one of the things, like what Sarah was talking about, and I think it's very true for movie musicals, is I think the early era of film was basically kind of just their own productions, these huge set pieces with these very mm-hmm. talented, huge dance numbers. And all they're doing is, with these major companies, they're just buying property and just plunking it out and just trying to lazily recreate a musical, which is what I think Disney does when they do the real life versions of their animated movies. Because mm-hmm. they just don't, the technology is just not there to match the sort of wonder and spectacle. And that's the huge thing when we're talking about Emilio Perez and musical, is there was no spectacle in this movie.
Uh-huh.
And
was not much of anything in this movie.
Yeah.
But like, just in terms of just like general criticism of, like, if you're going to call yourself a musical and do it well. And I think that's where Wicked sort of did a great job. Though I did not like the actual play, the movie, which was truly the first half, which is the only part I liked of the movie, I was just like, oh yeah, give me spectacle, because that's what I want. I want this to be larger than life.
Yeah. And I do think that the point of, like, animation is like a perfect venue for spectacle and for something being larger than life, because it's literally, it is that, you know. And so for Disney to be like, we're going to do a live action version of our animated musicals, it's sort of already removing an element of magic. Yeah, live. What is live action when it's computer generated the whole time? But yeah, it removes one of those. It removes that element of wonder and whimsy already because we don't have the magic of, you know, of 2D animation or whatever.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Where, catch me up, James. Where are we?
We are we're just in the cold open and generally talking about our feelings about movie musicals specifically, but musicals at large.
Musicals at large, but also movie musicals.
Movie musicals is how it's
started. Which I want to echo Lou's sentiments because I also grew up in New York City and I didn't see my first musical until after I had graduated high school. It was actually the summer after I graduated high school, and it's because my friend was like, hey, my parents have an extra ticket. Do you want to see this musical? And I was like, sure. And so the first musical I ever saw was The Drowsy Chaperone.
Oh, that rules.
They like brought it back, I guess. And and I was so confused because like one of the first things that happens, as anybody who has been to a Broadway show knows, is one of the main actresses comes out and everybody started applauding. And I was like, what's happening?
Who is that?
I was like, I've never seen this person in my life. But also, why are people applauding like this? We've just begun. We don't know if she's going to be good or not. And it was like, oh, I came to know that, yeah, that was like a tradition.
That's what's her name? She was in Younger. What is her name?
Oh, I'm sorry. I cannot help you with that.
Sutton Foster. Okay. I know that y'all may not care about this, but I just saw Sutton Foster in a musical out here. And for no reason at all, they were having her doing like these high kicks for no reason. They were like random high kicks that they would have her do throughout. And the only thing that I remember from Drowsy Chaperone is one moment in the middle when she does a high kick. And I said out loud, okay, leg. And it's been that has been burned in my brain for 20 years. I don't know how long ago that was, but
have y'all listened to or seen Assassins?
I've seen some of it. I've heard some of it.
I've been listening to so much Assassins recently. I feel like now's a great time for Assassins to become a movie musical.
Yeah.
I mean, just, you know, sort of, who it's knows? Just a feeling.
Who knows what thoughts it might put out into the universe. anyway, but yeah, movie musicals is kind of what I grew up. I remember watching Chicago in theaters and really liking it, you know, and being like, this is really good, before it won Best Picture. And then, I liked, Sweeney Todd
and sometimes Russell Crowe plays Javert.
Sometimes you get that for Les Mis. It's weird to have that alongside Anne Hathaway's performance.
I know.
But yeah, I mean, anyway, Hollywood loves a movie musical. And
they do. They really do.
They really do.
And I don't. And I'll keep it real. That's some corny bullshit.
Yeah.
And if anything to me shows white culture, it's a musical. Like, it is the quintessence, because the people who are like, wow, you got to watch this person, they could really sing. And I was like, no, I know better singers. I know better singers.
Yeah.
Five or six right off the top of my bat. And they're singing R&B. There's no R&B musicals. What the fuck's going on? Like, maybe I'm wrong. And again, maybe I'm wrong. But like, the closest hip hop that we're getting is Hamilton. And let's not play games.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. As a white guest on this podcast, for you listeners who can't see me, is the lesson I should take away that I should write an R&B musical?
because there are none, apparently.
I saw Motown the musical.
Okay.
Yeah. The thing is that they're not as celebrated. They are not as celebrated as the other ones, except for when it's Hamilton, you know, or except for when it's.
Yeah, Lin-Manuel. And there are certainly a lot less, because I don't think, you know, people of color are really
allowed to be making musicals
still not
for
allowed.
Quite some time. I mean, like, maybe now.
It is a very white space.
Yeah.
I mean, even Hadestown, which has, like, a very, like, theoretically, like, New Orleans,
right,
very black music-inspired score, was still written by, like, a white woman from Maine or something.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. And I love that.
What was her name?
Happy for that white woman.
Was it Amelia Perez?
You know
it. Oh, yes.
There's no other way it
wasn't. Speaking of people
writing movies about cultures that are not their own.
There's no other way to do this.
Smooth like Jiffy peanut butter.
Let's start the show.
Jonathan Raylock.
James III.
Drum Milligan. Jamie McGinn.
All right. Welcome to Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood City.
How much for just the butt for you? $45,000. I don't remember what the actual tone of that was, and I think they were speaking in Spanish. But if they, but that's the line that I took away.
That sounds right.
You're giving that song way too much melody.
For those of you listening for the first time, welcome. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood. We are a film review podcast. We review the films of leading black actors or actors of color generally.
That's right.
And talk about them in the context of race and diversity in Hollywood.
Talking about the issues.
Today, there are typically three of us. Jerome Milligan is not here.
He's not here, but I did a good impression.
Yeah, James did a great impression. This voice, I don't even want to do a bit. This voice you're listening to now is Jonathan Braylock. I'm too tired. Honestly, I'm too tired.
Amelia Perez broke Bray from doing the bit. And I also won't do a bit. This voice is James III.
Okay, but we have two fantastic guests on this episode to help us review a movie that is the most nominated movie at this year's Academy Awards.
The most?
It is.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
Second most
not
in history.
Just this. Not just this.
Second most in history?
Mm-hmm, that's right. Oh, all right. First of us, joining us, a return guest. You know them, you love them. Incredible comedian, Lou Gonzalez, everyone. Oh, we don't have Gerard to do drum rolls. Sorry.
Yeah, Gerard really does.
I'll do it for myself. and that's mixed. I'm gonna text him and ask him to just send me a voice note of that.
You don't want to hear it. You just don't want to hear it.
Well, hi everyone. Just a thrill to have watched the second most nominated Oscar movie in history. what a thrill. And I texted Bray like this. I was like, I'm going to begrudgingly watch this because I refuse to watch it on my own outside. Yeah.
And joining us for the first time, an incredible writer, improviser, along Harold Knight with me at the Los Angeles UCB Theater, Sarah Kaplan. Welcome. Welcome.
Hello, and thank you. Thanks so much for having me. Like Lou, I also refused to watch this movie before today. So I guess thanks for making me watch it. My mom's been begging me to, so she appreciates it.
I'm so interested in that. Do you know, I don't know. Expound on this if you want, but I want to know why your mom wanted you to watch this movie.
My mom watched it.
She just said because she watched it.
She watched it. She thought it was really good.
Yeah. Okay.
She's like, you're trans and you like musicals. Yeah, it's perfect. Okay.
That's what I figured. It's like her trying to connect, which is beautiful.
You're gonna like this.
You're gonna like this, right?
There is something about people who are completely out of touch with actual gender politics and a correlation with them loving this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here's what I want to clarify. That's true. I should clarify about my mom that she's only ever been an incredibly supportive parent ally to me.
Sure.
And has done a lot of self-work and a lot of research on this. She's just way less critical about movies than I am.
That's fair.
Yeah, this one, you weren't surprised in general. Regardless of the circumstances, you would have, your mom would have been like, hey, Emilia Perez.
Yeah, of course. We are reviewing Emilia Perez. This film came out last year on Netflix. It is, it stars Zoe Saldana, Carla Sofia Gasson, Selena Gomez. It is written and directed by a French man named Jacques. I can't pronounce this guy's last name.
Y'all, when Selena Gomez popped up, I was so I had no idea what was going on.
You didn't know Selena Gomez was in it?
I didn't know. I knew very little Odiard. About this movie going in. But
this movie is currently nominated for 13 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, 13! Best Director, Best
Must
Actress,
be nice.
Tying Return of the King,
Best Supporting Actress. Yeah. It won the Golden Globe already for Best Motion Picture Musical or Comedy. And I believe Carlo won as well for Best Actress in a Musical or Comedy. And so did Zoe Saldana, I believe.
And wasn't there another one? Because I remember the director speaking twice.
I think it won Best Foreign Language Film as well.
Or are you talking about the interview he does about the AI voice models they used?
Oh, no.
Right. Controversy. What? Slight controversy there. Yeah, well, we could talk about that.
Wait, what?
I would love to later.
Yeah, but let me just finish giving okay, this movie currently on Rotten Tomatoes has a 72% Rotten Tomatoes score, and it has a 17% audience score.
That's about right.
Which is, I mean, you gotta love movies like this that have the cross section of like both the people who are hateful and like hateful bigots don't like the movie, and then you know what I mean, like, and then like, or racist people like don't like the movie, but then also like people who are Mexican and trans also don't like the movie, and it's just that beautiful Venn diagram where everybody's like, we both don't
we just don't like this.
Sometimes what needs to bring people together is a hot piece of garbage.
This movie came out on Netflix, so it doesn't really have I guess it's okay, apparently it made $14 million at the box office. I guess it had some kind of release in theaters because it needed to qualify. Apparently it cost about $26 million to make, but obviously Netflix was in this for the awards, which seemingly they're getting and it is a musical. Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood is sponsored by BetterHelp. Guys, I don't know if you've heard the term red flags, or maybe even green flags. Sometimes we have relationships where, I don't know, we have to kind of take stock of how they're affecting our lives. Perhaps there are some red flags that are coming up that when you hang out with this person, not great things come out of you. Or when you hang out with this person, you find yourself to be a better person. Whether you're dating, married, building a friendship, or just working on yourself, form relationships that love you back. Now, I myself have done a lot of therapy. That sounds weird, but it's true. And I think that therapy can help in ways that sometimes we take for granted. It is amazing to have a person be able to hear what you have to say, not have any biases or, you know, wanting anything from you other than to be there to listen and to help, to reflect back to you or help you reflect back to yourself things that are happening in your life that you might want to change. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is fully online. It makes therapy affordable and convenient, and it serves over 5 million people worldwide. you can have access to a diverse network of more than 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialities. You could easily switch therapists at any time at no extra cost. So, I don't know, maybe consider BetterHelp. Discover your relationship green flags with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/jump today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/jump. Jump into BetterHelp. Hey guys, All-Star Weekend is almost here, and Prize Picks is the best place to win cash while watching your favorite players during the game and the Saturday night events like the three-point contest.
Prize Picks also offers weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts like Taco Tuesday each Tuesday. Prize Picks discounts select player projections up to 25% to provide even more value for your lineup.
It's the best way to win real money this basketball season. Which players are going to go up? Which ones aren't? Are you a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander fan? Or maybe you're an Anthony Edwards fan? Who knows? Make your picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks.
Download the app today and use code Hollywood to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's right. Download the app today and use code Hollywood to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. Run your game.
Yo, run that game, baby.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
I don't think I want to say anything else about it. We might as well just dive right into initial thoughts.
We must.
Who wants to start? Does anyone feel so bold? And for those who haven't listened to this before, we are going to spoil this movie. We're going to talk about it all. So if you don't like spoilers, turn it off now. But
I'll dive in with my biggest takeaway.
Sarah, please.
Which is, like, I went in knowing that I wasn't going to like the trans representation in this movie. When my mom described loosely the plot to the movie, I was like, oh, okay, that sounds awful. I'm never going to watch it. So I knew it was going to be problematic. But if you haven't seen the movie, the pitch, the log line is like, it's a movie musical about a Mexican drug cartel boss who tries to escape his life of crime and also become her true self by transitioning into a woman. And I'm like, all right, at least I thought it would be kind of interesting. And I thought there'd be lots of stuff for me to be like, whoa, that's terrible. That's bad representation. That's whatever. And I just found myself so bored. I was just like, I'd be like, by the time she died, I didn't realize she died until like 4 minutes later. And I had to rewind and be like, wait, what happened?
Yeah. It's nonsense.
So yeah, surprised how bored I was.
Lou?
I thought I was going to be more offended, and I wasn't.
Oh.
Yeah. I guess that is my takeaway. I was like, I thought I was going to be angry, but like Sarah said, I was like, oh, this is just a bad movie.
It's just a bad movie.
This is just a bad movie. But I will say it did feel like a person was like, how do I make a movie? What are some topics? And it was like Mad Libs. And it was Mexican cartel, trans, you know, it was like, let's just put it together. And I was like, I'll say this. If she was also a werewolf, I would have been gagged and I would have liked this movie.
It would have made the movie a lot better.
Because I will say there's layers to identity, and that's what people don't understand, you know? And so like, I think like for a musical, it was barely a musical. And
there were a lot of songs.
Lot of songs.
They did they did songs, but were they singing? Like,
No.
So like, that's what I'm saying. It's like, and for a movie that has music, that's musical, it just seemed like when they were singing, it got darker, which feels like the opposite of what a musical should be. It should be brighter. And for a Mexican cartel movie, not enough Mexican cartel things going on. It was a lot of hodgepodge of stuff.
Yeah.
One of my early notes was, to your point, Lou, just Lin-Manuelization. It's just what's happened to musicals in general.
So, yeah, I saw this with Tessa, my wife, and at home. And we had no idea what it was about. I didn't know it was a musical when I had turned it on. And then very quickly, I realized it was a musical, obviously, because it kind of starts off with the song. And actually, that first song, I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. Yes.
The first song was okay.
The first song was, I think, probably the best song in it, which was very, to me, reminiscent of La La Land, where it like starts off and I was like, oh, this is interesting. Okay, we got boom, we got some stuff going on. Okay, so... Oh, Zoe's the kind of the main lead, and she's a lawyer who's like seemingly defending criminals, and she doesn't want to, but this is the life she has to lead or whatever. And then very quickly it kind of just, and then takes a left turn, and she's kidnapped and
more like a leftist turn, am I right?
Yeah.
Also, we never see her lawyer again, right? She doesn't lawyer any other place.
I mean, I guess technically she's lawyer. Right. Technically, she's supposed to be lawyering throughout, though. It's very vague what exactly she's doing or why she's
the idea is just that she's brilliant in general.
Yeah, she's just smart and can put affairs in order, even though
it's
I don't know.
Unclear
why I need a lawyer
what exactly she does. That's particularly intelligent in this story. Yeah. Like, she Googles two surgeons.
Yeah, it did. This movie was just so confusing. Tess and I were kind of laughing at the lyrics, and we were like, "These lyrics are horrible.
They're bad."
And there was a point where I was like, "Is it just lost in translation?" Because I'm not a Spanish speaker, and I was just like, "Maybe it's better if you speak Spanish." But from everybody I've talked to who speaks Spanish, not true.
Let me read some of the lyrics back to you, and you can tell me. Hello, very nice to meet you. I want to know about sex change operation. I don't know about you. I think it's poetry.
Hearing it isolated like that, Oscar.
Yeah, or give here's it. Another Oscar caliber line. Man to woman, woman to man, man to woman,
man to woman,
penis to vagina.
Penis to vagina.
Penis to vagina.
Yes, yes. That's the one that's up for best song, right? Yeah. That's the one. Okay.
No, it's not. Don't tell me that.
I don't know.
That song was so bad.
Don't tell me that. I mean, we have to look up which for best song. Anyway, I'll finish off my initial thoughts. I just thought that this movie was insane. Like, I felt like I was on an acid trip a little bit. Nothing seemed to make any sense. Like, there was no logic. I did think some of the acting was good at times. Like, I was like, I'm with these actors. At the same time, I was like, but this plot is so crazy. I don't understand why it's up for all these technical awards. I didn't think it was technically very sound either. And then, yeah, it just felt like, wow, this is what people thought was great representation. I don't know. I just could see Hollywood patting itself on the back in this way that felt very reminiscent of Green Book. And so, anyway. That's my initial thoughts, James.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing that I feel like I can add to this, and it won't even be adding, but is that the thing you said, Lou, about it feeling like Mad Libs really resonates with me, because it felt like it was plugging in all of the things that could get Oscar nominations, you know, and then this is the movie that came out, and it was disjointed and strange. Like, it's almost like a musical as an afterthought. You know, it feels like they were like, and also it's a musical in a way that is was just bizarre to me. And yeah, I mean, I'm excited to talk about it more, like the nitty gritty more, but I was like mad. I was mad the whole movie. Every time something would happen, it was just like, it was laughable how like they're like, and this will really get them, is what it felt like. It felt like every new scene, it was like, and this is the one that's really gonna get them, you know. And I don't know, I just was not in it.
Can I ask y'all a question,
please?
Y'all are professional movie reviewer types. Sure. If you're writing a movie, it's the year 2024.
Okay.
You know everything you know. And yeah. How would you choose to introduce your trans character in your in your trans positive theoretically movie? Your options are A, with a creepy stalker phone call in a woman's bathroom, or B, literally any other way.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's just so funny because it's like this character is an evil person because they've seemingly murdered like hundreds of people. Like, I mean, the amount of bodies that are uncovered in the third act of this movie is like horrifying. And the idea that just uncovering bodies is enough to like undo some of this damage is whatever. But like the thing that the movie never really explores is like okay, this person wants to trans. I guess like I thought when I heard the blurb of what this movie was, I thought it was going to be more about a person who was like stuck in, like, felt like they were stuck in a Mexican cartel. They had this thing that they had to keep secret, which of course, because they were going to get killed, and like they were trying to find their way out. I didn't realize it was going to be like the head of a Mexican cartel, which kind of implies so much more.
Yeah.
I mean, it's truly wild. And it's right off the bat.
Yeah. I've also found it strange how little the rest of the movie was not like the walls closing in. Like it wasn't like, you know, oh, is that, I can't remember.
Manitas.
Manitas. Is that Manitas? I can't, you know, they'd like that. Never comes up.
I think, James, what you're failing to understand as a trans woman, I feel equipped to speak to this. You're failing to understand that gender transition makes you literally unrecognizable to anybody. Not even your wife, upon spending weeks with you in a house, no chance that she'll recognize you. To the point where when you are telling her intimate details of when she and you first met, she's still going to be like, what? I don't understand. Who are you?
But also, like, his wife could be just stupid. Like, that's just...
She's clearly stupid.
You know? I think we're a little too hard if... the people who wrote this movie, if their intention was everyone here is stupid.
Right. Right.
Right.
Because if everyone is like super stupid, then a lot of this makes sense.
So is the idea we're in Mexico, so everybody here is
Mexican
stupid.
People are stupid.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That sounds like what Jacques would have intended. Yeah,
you know, and people forget about that aspect of intersectionality.
right.
You know, they're like, oh, intersectionality so that we can understand each other. But what about intersectionality so that we can continue to degrade and keep silent?
Yeah.
Representation.
Well, one of the things I truly do. Okay. So, I mean, to set the stage for people who might not have seen it, essentially, we get Zoe Saldana as this lawyer, like I talked about. She gets kidnapped in the car. This Mexican the head of the Mexican drug cartel, I forgot what his name
Manitas
is.
Manitas del Monte.
Manitas del Monte is...
Manitas.
I took notes on this whole movie. It's the only way I could get through it.
He speaks very softly. He's just like talking like this the whole time. And essentially says, do you want to agree to something? I can't tell you what it is. But once you agree to it, you have to do it or you'll die. Maybe I'll give you money if you agree to it. And then for, I don't know what reason, she goes, yep. I'm like, what? What? I don't know what her character motivation is to say yes.
Anyway, or, you know,
I guess so. Maybe she's like, I guess I feel like, yeah, maybe she feels like she has to say yes no matter what.
He had $2 million in an account waiting for her, and she was tired of shopping at the discount Mexican grocery store for bad yogurt. I don't know.
And also, to be fair, he knew where she was at all times and kidnapped her.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, there he's like, if you do this, I'll kill you. If you don't do this, I'll kill you. But if you do this, you'll get $2 million. And I'm like, you know what? Let's do it.
I think that's a good option.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I want to transition. Okay. You have to figure out all the details. You have to plan this out. You have to find somebody who could do this. And then she spends the next 20 minutes of the movie going around the world trying to find somebody who can operate on this person within secrecy.
That's also something that I thought was really cool representation, is that this person is interested in transitioning but has done no research or looked into it at all in any way whatsoever. They're just like, well, you figure it out.
She's been on HRT for 2 years.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. And that's all you need. Yeah.
Well, HRT is very powerful. And, you know, this is the first of my problems with this movie in the trans representation category. First, a line that just annoyed me. Zoe Saldana asks, like, do you want to change your life or to change your sex? And Emilia responds, what's the difference? Okay, for Emilia's specific situation of I run a very dangerous Mexican drug cartel.
Very big difference.
I buy that transitioning will require changing your life drastically.
For sure.
I just want to clarify for listeners, cis listeners, transitioning doesn't have to change your life at all. You know what I was doing before I transitioned? I was a mostly unemployed musical improviser. And you know what? 7 years later, after many years of transitioning, I'm still a mostly unemployed musical improviser. So it's like this misconception people have that like transition has to be like a huge, like you want to change who you are as a literal human being to the point where your wife won't recognize you and only your child can smell you.
Oh,
and only your child can smell you.
The thing is, it would make more sense if she did go, I'm transitioning and I do want to get out of my life and I just want a new, completely different person in a different area. But then she winds. I mean, I don't know what we're supposed to believe happens after she does transition, and then they like fatefully meet. What was it, like a year later or something?
4 years later.
4 years later, like at some dinner. Yeah, and Zoe Saldana. That's the other thing. Zoe Saldana doesn't recognize her, and no I'm way. Like, what?
That's no way.
No way.
Again, I think we just have to accept that they're all stupid.
Right.
Yeah. Except for Zoe Saldana, who's very smart.
Very smart, unless when it comes to recognizing people.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so that happens, and then she's like, I actually want my family back.
Mm-hmm.
I want my kids back, so figure out a way. And then we're also supposed to be this entire time Selena Gomez and her two kids have just been living in like Switzerland or something.
Yeah.
Where were they?
Switzerland, yeah.
Yeah, Switzerland.
She said Switzerland. Yeah.
For like 4 years, thinking that her husband is dead and she had to flee Mexico for her own safety. Zoe Saldana like gets wrangled back into this. I don't know. Again,
You're skipping so much.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about the Bangkok gender surgery clip.
Yes. Oh, yeah, we do. Yeah, we gotta talk about
that's
that.
And honestly, the two songs, that song and the song about like whether or not Zoe's character should even answer the call, to me, I was so jarred by how it felt like the tone was so strange, because I felt like what was happening was like, this is really serious. Like a drug lord is asking you to meet with them, and then now they want you to figure out their entire transition. And yes. And the songs were like, yeah, da 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 da, and it was like, why are they so upbeat? I don't get why they're so upbeat. I was just so confused in this part of the movie.
You're talking about Zoe Saldana with the chorus of Cleaning Ladies.
Yes, the chorus of Cleaning Ladies. That whole sequence.
Not that there aren't going to be cleaning people in Mexico, but they're really focused on them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, they were like, it's akin to the Crow backup dancers in Dumbo. They were like, they'll be cleaning ladies. You know, they were like,
there's going to be a lot of cleaning ladies because Mexico's dirty. It's a dirty place. And there has to be that many cleaning ladies, you know? That's why you send them to Switzerland. You don't send them to another part of Mexico.
And they're in Mexico City, which, it's got a lot of wealth inequality like our country, but there's a lot of very fancy parts of Mexico City.
Mexico City is banging.
Yeah, but there's only one rich person in Mexico in this movie, and it's Emilia Perez, who still kept all of her fucking cartel money somehow.
Yes,
and power and influence.
Yeah, where's the moral conundrum in any of that?
Okay, but the song in where were we?
Here's where we were. Vaginoplasty, mammoplasty, rhinoplasty, laryngoplasty. Yes.
Oh
yes,
my God.
Yes.
That was incredible.
All of the different plasties.
Just like the demonic smiling nurses and patients.
Yes.
Like giant, awful, satanic surgery compound that is like everything Marjorie Taylor Greene thinks trans medicine is.
Yeah.
Also, like there was a scene where she had, like Zoe said, I had to like argue with one of the doctors about like
Dr. Wasserman. Yeah.
I was just like, what is this? Sorry. Go ahead, Lou.
That was right after this. Right?
It was.
So much of it was so blatantly stupid. Like it was so dumb that I enjoyed it.
Right. Yeah. No. Kind of. Yeah. Because it was wild.
I was like, "This is so fucking dumb." To the point where you could essentially have fun, campy parties singing along to these stupid fucking songs because they're that dumb. Like that in itself is a gift.
I'm gonna remix the penis to vagina song. Yeah. Like, obviously, it needs it.
But that's part of my confusion about the movie and about particularly the first act of the movie, because I think you're right, Lou. I think that was the point of both of these songs that I have such a problem with. But the movie itself, I think, also wants to take the stakes of the movie as seriously as they are, you know? And so it's...
Oh, sure.
I'm trying to transfer this to on stage because I feel like it's not like musicals don't have songs that are antithetical to the moment, you know, that are like, and now here we're in this and you're, you know, but but I don't know, it was so jarringly different than the scene we just got out of that I was like so confused as to why they want me to be like smoking weed and laughing at this right now, you know, or whatever it is that
I think there's just a fundamental disconnect with what they're talking about. There's no real intelligence or thought put into this. So them trying to do musical can't come off as camp because if, you know, a trans person did this in terms of camp, people would probably be gagged by it. Like, this is crazy. Yeah. But the fact that it is from someone who is that disconnected, that's why those other parts, I think, maybe feel disparate.
I disagree. I think this is actually the tone is intentional, but I think the intention is to undercut the legitimacy of these surgeons. It's to portray this Bangkok gender surgery clinic as inherently unserious, as being like drug pushers who will give anyone these operations, no questions asked.
It does feel like that. You're right.
It's to set up the counter to what the movie presents as like the good trans doctor who's going to misgender you forever and be no, he shouldn't get the surgery. He shouldn't do it. Look, he's not real. He's not a real transgender. He shouldn't do the surgery.
Right.
And Zoe Saldana like says to him before she meets the Israeli doctor, she's like, no, this guy's the real guy. Like, he doesn't just give you what you want. Like he takes it seriously. And I think it plays into like a lot of actually really harmful narratives about trans medicine being just handed out like candy, as though I haven't. Audience members, I'm trying to get bottom surgery. I'm trying to get the penis to vagina surgery. And I had to wait a year and a half from calling my doctor's office to schedule a consultation.
Wow. Wow.
When I got to my consultation, they were like, great, we can add you to a 3-year wait list. Like,
oh my God.
Sheesh.
No one is out here frivolously handing out anything in the medical system anywhere. Also, only like I looked this up for the movie. This movie, like every trans narrative that cis people tell and give awards to, it gets so fucking fascinated with the idea of these surgeries as what defines gender transition.
Right.
Like maybe 10% of trans women get vaginoplasty. Most don't, because doctors won't give it to them because it's expensive or because they don't want it. Right. Like most of gender transition is like HRT is much more common. A lot of it's also just clothes and social and name and stuff. Like you don't go from being the most machismo cartel boss man to waking up wrapped in bandages. She got facial feminization surgery and vaginoplasty at the same time, which right. is fucking insane. And then she just wakes up and she's a girl. Like that's literally Family Guy logic. That's what right. Quagmire's dad does in that Family Guy episode.
Yeah, it's truly, I mean, it's crazy. And then the idea that like this was like some sort of magical thing that removed her identity from literally every single person that knew her is,
yeah, it's crazy,
wild. And yet she seemed to still have access to everything,
all of her money,
which
all of
they
her
never explain.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that is, again, it's all stupid, but like it, which is just like, oh, this is a bad movie, right? This is just a bad movie. There's just no clean logic connect in almost anything that moves from the next thing. It's just this happens. So, okay, but now this is happening. Okay, and now this is like, there's no logic behind anything because, yeah, if you are planning and plotting for this, it would also be in, I would also be interested, and it also would be a fascinating narrative to see who their allies were to sort of help them through this, to see what these conversations were like, to see that, you know, like in this very masculine cartel based, like there's a good movie.
There's a lot of interesting
there's
things.
A good 8-episode prestige drama. Right. Yeah. Wherein, like, Manitas Del Monte undergoes a realistic, slow, gradual, awkward social and medical transition while trying to stay the head cartel boss.
Right.
And that would be cool. I would watch that.
Yeah.
So, some of the other things, like, I feel like we never get her relate. Like, at some point in the movie, she basically tells Zoe Saldana's character that you're like, you're my friend, you're my only friend or my best friend or something like that, which is like wild because we're like, what friendships do you guys have? But then I guess it's like, oh, you don't have any friendships with anybody. But even with like the relationship with like Selena Gomez, I was like, I thought the acting was good. Like they were putting so much into that scene, but I was so confused by like, I was like, so are you still attracted to your wife? Like, mm-hmm. are you, like, did you ever care about her? Like, did you really love her? Do you just like, was she just a prop to you? Obviously you cheated on her. Did you care about the person that you cheated on with? Were you just like kind of this sexist, like very, you know, misogynistic person? And now you're, I don't know if the movie was trying to be like, well, now you're in a different perspective. And so you're feeling bad about like how you were treating her before. I feel like we get none of that, like none of that exploration,
you're thinking about it more than Jacques Audiard.
Yeah. he's like, he's going to transition and he's going to want to keep his kids. And I'm like, okay, girl. Like, but I feel like there's other things going on here.
No, you don't understand. He's a Mexican man, but then surgery and he becomes woman.
Dirty Mexican turns to clean woman.
Even the relationship between her and her kids, I was like obviously we see that, you know, okay, she loves her kids, she wants to like buy things for them, and there's also a possessive quality to it of just like, I own this and I'm used to just owning everything, you know. But I was like, there could have been an interesting exploration of, hey, maybe as, you know, the male version of yourself, you didn't feel like you were allowed to be loving and nurturing and have these feminine qualities that you could display to your kids because you were afraid of what other people were seeing. So you never did. And now you get to feel that. And maybe we get a little bit of insight of like the, like what that feels like now and how that's changing you or whatever. I just felt like we never really knew who this person was. It's like they hung this character on like the archetype of what a Mexican drug cartel would be, whatever that is. And then, oh, now I'm a woman and I just want my life back a little bit and I have that control, but we don't really get to explore.
There wasn't, you know what I mean? Like, time.
There wasn't enough time. There wasn't enough time. 2-hour, 20-minute movie. Yeah.
I feel like a little bit is because the people who made this don't really have a great understanding of what it's like to be trans or Mexican.
Yeah.
Not at all. And it doesn't seem like they have much of a curiosity of it either. It's almost like they just were using these identities as plot devices to try to get what ultimately they got. Which
is 13 Oscar nominations, baby. Yes.
A thing that was happening for me, and it could just be that I missed something, but my understanding of the motives behind the transition was to go into hiding. Was that?
No, what? That wasn't it. She was genuinely a trans woman.
She genuinely transitioned. Right. Okay.
Had she not been a trans woman, to me, the sense was she would have been content to be a cartel boss. It's just that she knew by transitioning, she would no longer be able to safely be a cartel boss. So the hiding was to enable her to transition, not because that was her ultimate goal.
And like I said, it seemed like she still held some power within whatever cartel system there was, because once we get to Selena Gomez starting to form a relationship with another man and her feeling possessive over that and the children and then threatening her, and then essentially she has the money and connections to muscle. I mean, and of course now we're leaving out the whole, I mean, I guess we can talk about another interesting perhaps concept, you know, which was maybe very different from the trans story, or maybe not, I don't know. We have a whole storyline of her starting an organization that helps people find the bodies of their loved ones who have gone missing.
La Lucecita.
And that was an interesting song. I forgot what that song was.
My only note I have on that song was, nothing good has ever happened in Mexico.
Yeah. One of the lines in that is, I should have written this down, but it was something like, you know, we're here to overcome the stigma people have of us or something like that. And I was just like, this feels really sweeping. Like it's just saying something too finite about like all of Mexico, you know, like
right.
I felt like Jack Odiard was setting up his sequel Migrant Caravan Border Crisis.
Yeah. Yeah.
This movie felt like, and I don't know if you got like your friend who's in theater school and they wrote a play and they want to talk about something.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And then you go and you see it and you're like, oh boy. Well, at least this is you starting out, like, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a movie that won, like, has 13 Oscar nominations.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
You know, I wrote a trans musical that debuted last year. And I have 0 Oscar nominations.
Wow. So, and that is not fair. frankly.
That's why I wrote it. And
Sarah, just like take some notes from this movie.
I will.
Because it's getting the noms.
Sarah, did you have a line that said something like, you smell like my dad, like Diet Coke with ice, lemon, and sweat, mezcal, and guacamole?
Would you like the whole list of everything she smells like?
Because I yes.
This is what this Emilia Perez smells like. Mountains, leather, coffee, food, spicy, spicy food, roasting lamb, the engine of a car, Coca-Cola light with lemon, ice cubes, and sweat, little pebbles hot from the sun, grass, mezcal, guacamole, dogs and car rides, and cigars.
And so, and again, no
wow,
disrespect.
What a palate.
No disrespect to this kid, but this kid don't have that kind of palate. And that kid's a liar. And that kid's a liar. And like
that kid's eight?
Yeah, eight. And you know he's lying. Because that's what kids do.
And he hasn't seen his dad in 4 years.
Yes. Have you ever had a conversation?
That's the one thing that makes sense is that the kid doesn't recognize because he hasn't seen him in 4 years. He was 4 years old when
he should have also said like spaceships and fireflies. And then I would have been like, that makes sense.
No, because the kid, the Mexican child in the mind of Jacques Odillard, I think is close enough to animal that they have a superhuman sense of smell. and the smell betrays the truth about Emilia Perez, which is that she'll never escape smelling like a cliche Mexican man.
You'll need to understand these kids. They are like wolves. They sniff, sniff, they know.
The Israeli surgeons, they can turn penis into vagine, but hey, you'll never stop smelling like spicy lamb and leather.
Like mezcal and guacamole.
So fucked up.
Oh, that's so offensive.
Yeah. This song infuriated me because the idea of it, I really wanted to connect to. Oh, the literally like, this is my... You are this person who's no longer in my life. I'm feeling this connection.
Who I was told was dead. Yeah.
It's like this is supposed to tug at your heartstrings in a way that it is only, but it is unfortunately only laughable, you know?
Like this is literally something Cartman could have sung in the Jennifer Lopez hand episode.
Oh my God, you're right. And again, if the lighting of this of these lyrics are changed ever so slightly, this will be a gag.
Just don't say guacamole, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Maybe the guacamole is maybe too on the nose.
I do want to point out that song comes after what I think is the most important line in the movie, which is "My pussy still hurts when I think of you."
Yes.
Yes.
Oh my God.
The way I love that line, the way when that line was said, I was like, okay, and now I get the nominations.
Yeah, because isn't that in one of the nominated songs? Is that the Camino?
No, it's what Selena says.
Oh, it's not. Yeah. It should have been sung. Yeah. But that's just a regular line.
She has her very confusing song where she talks about being back in golden handcuffs, and she keeps, like, in my opinion, ironically calling Emilia cousin dear, and she like literally calls it out. She's like, I can see the clothesline where all the laundered money is hung out to dry, and I'm back in this golden prison. And I'm like, oh, so you know who it is. You do know who she is.
I kept thinking that too. but it never comes to be that that's what it is.
Not until right before she dies does she realize what's happening.
Unbelievable.
And that's drama.
Yeah, and that's drama.
I did like this. That's the way the choreography of that song, particularly all of the bed stuff. You know what I mean? I was like, and now the movie has begun, you know? Mm-hmm. now we're in the movie.
And so we have also Emilia has like a slight thing for a woman who comes in and is looking for her dead loved one.
Yeah.
And she she brought a weapon in, and Emilia like shows her gun.
Wild.
Pulls her gun in front of everybody.
Yeah, from a balcony or from a second floor window.
She's like, we're the same.
Yelling across yelling and whispering. It was like, hey, oh, look at my gun. Like, wild.
She's also the most callous fucking person to be doing this job. Epifania's like, where is my husband? She's like, he's in the morgue. Why is he in the morgue? He's dead.
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, clearly no. This is the thing, is this person is a hardened criminal who, again, has killed dozens and dozens of people with zero remorse. And then whatever thing that's happening here, where I don't know if we're ever supposed to think that she is turning a new leaf or become like, or if she's just, because it felt like to me when it was happening, just because of everything we've seen, I was like, oh, she's just doing this to satisfy whatever small guilt maybe that she has, though I don't even know if she has guilt about some of this stuff. And then it kind of turns it into like being like, oh, I'm a savior. And then immediately with her, with Selena, like his wife or her wife, when she goes away with the kids, she's like, well, I'm going after her and maybe I'll kill her. Like, I'll kill her to get back my kids.
Well, I mean, again, you're expecting there to be nuance and thought behind this.
Right.
And it's just not going to happen. I think they were just like, I think what's fascinating you're talking about is like, what do you think their ignorant intention was?
Right.
Yeah.
And I do think like in a lazy way, they're like, well, let's show that this person maybe is trying to change. Not that they have, but maybe that they're trying.
They're trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think she's meant to be turning a new leaf.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe.
She's trying. She's, yeah.
I think it's highly inappropriate to tell a woman you found her husband dead in a morgue and immediately start hitting on her.
Yeah.
That's just abuse of your position.
And they have sex instantly also?
They cut to morning after.
Well, keep in mind, if they had a proper, you know, growth of a relationship, this movie would be 2.5 hours. So I will say,
and they can't.
Yeah, I thought the sex happened too soon, but then immediately they're like, "Estoy enamora," I'm in love. And my note there was, at least it's an accurate depiction of U-Haul lesbians. Like, that's kind of gender affirming,
right?
Yeah,
because you know, a straight man in that situation would be like, let's not label this.
Yeah.
But also, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day.
Exactly. Yeah. And then unfortunately, they ruin it by immediately in the next scene, Jacques Godillard remembers that, like, right, she's a man. So when she gets angry, she turns back into a man. Yes. And she'll fucking beat her wife.
Yeah.
In blatant nonsense, like, what do you mean you're taking the kids with you? The kids would stay with me, the cousin they've never met.
Yeah.
I truly am infuriated by this entire couple sequences, but especially this part, because in the back and like once Selena leaves, there's like the three-way call with Amelia and Zoe and Selena, and it's like they're like, why would she do that? I don't know why she would do that. I'll talk to her, you know. And they're like just like cutting back and forth to each other, and it's just like, why does Selena not know what's happening? Like, at this point, you don't feel anything.
Why is Amelia a literal werewolf in this? She is a werewolf in this scene, Luke.
And that's, I was about to say that this would have been a great opportunity if she was a werewolf, to have it really happen.
Yeah.
But she straight up like growls. She's just like, quiero mis hijos. Yeah.
Should have been a werewolf. Should have been a werewolf.
Yeah. And then there's this crazy shootout.
What the fuck is the ending of this movie?
It was such it was a nightmare to sort of piece together in my mind.
It's like, I guess the man that Selena Gomez is dating is also some sort of drug lord.
He's a Mexican man, Jonathan.
Yeah, true. who has his own army of people with guns.
Yeah. Who knows how to make that pussy hurt, okay?
they kidnap Amelia Perez. Zoe Saldana, who again, for no apparent reason, is like, till the day I die, will be riding for this person.
Zoe should have left her so long ago.
I mean, you have money. Like, why are you here?
When she found out that Amelia was abducted, and she goes, oh my God, I couldn't believe what was happening.
I was like, what? This person abduct? Your relationship started with an abduction.
You are still captive. If you really think, you're still held captive.
They wanted your help to transition, and the way they did that was kidnapping you.
Yeah. And I think this is a good time to remind people that, like, just because someone's trans doesn't mean they're a good person.
And that's what this movie is about.
You know? Yes, a reminder.
And that's what I love. I love that there's not a lot of trans narratives, but the one that there are, trans are evil.
And that's why all the award givers are like, this feels so true.
Yeah, this feels really, this feels right.
This is what I thought was happening. And therefore.
And this is trans to me. Yeah. Oscar all nomination. Right.
Did y'all catch how old Selena Gomez's character was when she met Amelia?
Oh no. How old did she say she was?
So when Amelia is like lying, dying on the floor in the middle of the shootout, and she's talking, reminiscing about when they first met and sharing all these intimate details that only she would know, and Selena spends the whole time being like, I don't understand, who are
what's
you,
what's going on,
you know that.
I've never met you before.
I was so bored I like tuned out at this part of the movie, and then my friend came over and saw me watching it and was like, oh yeah, did you see the part where they made her a pedophile too at the end just for good measure? And I was like, wait, they what? So I went back and I read the script for this scene. What Amelia tells Selena Gomez is, do you remember I was dating your older sister? You were 14.
No!
And it was you that I fancied.
I remember the older sister part. I did not clock the age. That is crazy.
I take back what I said, fully offended by the trans representation of this movie.
And like, to an extent, I feel like that's Jacques Audiard as just like a French guy being like hot. But yeah.
The evangelization is very French. Yeah.
I remember I was 17 or I was 19. What was the age? That's what I remember.
Don't remember. And then how old she was.
Oh, that's.
Oh, is that the song where it's you are 16 going on 17?
That is what they were doing. They were doing that.
Their version of it.
I truly hated this ending. When the car exploded, that was absurd.
So they both died. And then after they died, the entire city, Mexico City, decides to sing the praises of Amelia Perez.
Yeah, because she did a lot. She did a lot.
But it's weird because they're marching around and it's like, it looks like, I think the name of the song is Beatification. And it like looks like and sounds like that. But the lyrics that that Epifania is singing are just like, here's to the woman, my mysterious woman of the night, my woman who wouldn't tell me anything about herself, my woman who left at dawn. It's just like, singing about this booty call, like,
yeah, it was just this one night. Oh man,
this movie sucked, dude.
It was a tough watch. I'm not gonna lie. I did at one point. I was like, I went at like 1.5 speed to watch it. I was like, I can't.
You have to.
I was like, I'm not watching this in real time. I can't watch this in real time.
Frankly, I should have, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, we did it. It's time for the cause. We don't rate films based on how much we liked it, but whether or not they helped the cause of, you know, leading Black actors or in perhaps this case, leading trans actors. And if it fully helps that cause of having more actors of color, more trans actors in Hollywood, we give it a black fist. If it somewhat helped the cause, we give it a white palm. If it doesn't help the cause at all, we don't get anything.
Do you do like a Death of the Author style, or should we be looking at Carla Sofia Gascon's tweets?
You have to think about everything encompassing.
And what this is going, is this going to help or is this going to help or not?
It's all encompassing and yes. It's not like no one thing should determine what your vote is, but take it into account and vote how you will. And that's why I said, oh no, because I'm very scared.
All right.
Very scared.
Okay. On the count of three, we'll raise our ratings.
I'm not ready and I will never be ready. And so keep going. You can count to three, but I.
Oh, it's a hand gesture. We actually literally. Yeah.
So you do either this, or don't put up.
Don't put anything up.
Great. Yeah.
Okay. One. Two, three.
I gotta give it a fist.
No, you don't.
I'm sorry, I do.
Okay, one black fist, two white palms, and nothing. And I think this is the most appropriate rating.
I think it is too.
Okay, let me just explain myself real quick.
I knew you were gonna do this, Bray.
I do think Carla's gonna win Best Actress.
Ooh.
And I think it's going to happen. And if it does happen, I do think, despite the person, despite this movie and the representation, it is a milestone. It is a stepping. It's not the one that you necessarily want, but it is something. And I do think it will help. But maybe not. Maybe I'll be wrong. But that's why. And also, I don't know, Zoe Saldana and Selena both really love this movie for some reason. And maybe
so proud really of it. Do.
Yeah. So, yep, that's why I gave it. But you all go ahead, please.
Yeah, after y'all.
I'm grading this on a curve because I'm grading it based on society. And I don't have a high opinion of society and their understanding of trans and gender issues. So I look at, progress is not moving at the rate that I want it, but it is moving and it's really fucking ugly. And this movie is a great embodiment of that. And so I see this very poor attempt, but also it being pushed financially by the industry as at least a good sign in which something like this never would have previously been entertained or even thought of. Just like other pieces of representation that were very poor, they're getting better. I think these people think they're doing something, but they're not to those who are marginalized. But I do think it's getting into the zeitgeist of those who are ignorant and those who are in places of power. While I personally don't give two shits about awards because they literally were invented to silence the working actors. However, it is something that is of value in our society. And I can't ignore that. Very much like when someone looks at me and they call me a dude, I don't like it, but I understand your ignorance. And so that's how I feel about this movie. I don't like it, but I understand its ignorance. And my hope is that the propagation of this at least does some moving forward. And that's why I put the palm up.
Yeah, I put nothing up for this one. And I'm only judging it for trans representation. I won't speak to any other forms of representation in the film because I'm very white and very American. I don't think all representation is good representation. I think that's one of the lessons we've learned over the last few years as a trans community is, in a lot of ways, boy, it was better when people weren't talking about us at all. And I think that this film specifically plays into so many of the like fascist TERF lies about trans women, why we transition, who we are, what we are, what matters about it. Both like both people like J.K. Rowling, who just hate us, and people who want to use this to justify all kinds of harmful medical narratives. Like the fact that the surgeon is like, and you've wanted this your whole life? And she's like, yep, I've wanted it since I was a kid. Like, that's like a really harmful misconception about the experience of being trans, which most of us don't have the like concepts taught to us to understand ourselves in that way until way later in life when we have to deprogram a bunch of shit and figure it out. For that reason, I think this is actually harmful representation. And if Carla Sofia Gascón is the first trans woman to win Best Actress, I agree, I don't care about awards. But God, if the first trans woman to win Best Actress is also like in all of these screenshotted tweets as like an out and out like racist, anti-vax denier, Hitler apologist, like that's not helpful. That's just fodder, you know? Like they don't need any more fodder. They make up enough fodder. They don't need real fodder.
That's fair.
Yeah. And I'll just say that like while I do think that this movie sort of really doing gangbusters will contribute to more movies with more trans representation, I think that we're going to get a lot more movies like this as a result, and I don't want more movies like this. And so that's why I gave it a palm instead of a fist. But yeah, so sheesh. I hope we can do better in the future.
I think it's also worth, I forgot to mention, shout out Jesse Ginder, who's a trans YouTuber who does media criticism in general, who had her critique of this movie actively like taken down directly through, you know, YouTube copyright strike bullshit by Netflix. And she's not the only trans person commenting on this film who's struggled with that kind of stupid blatant censorship stuff. So yeah, you know, when you got the production company silencing the trans people trying to talk about the movie, it's that not a good look.
Yeah. And you know, I actually didn't look, I'm reading now some of this, the controversy stuff, and I didn't realize how bad this has got.
She's not on the poster.
She's not on the poster anymore. Netflix has just stopped her.
I don't think she's going to win.
She's not going to win. Especially because they already had their Will Smith incident. There's no way they're going to let somebody win. Yeah, so she
won't
win.
Have you read her tweets?
I didn't.
Pretty wild.
Yeah, they're bad.
They're pretty wild.
Oh, they're bad.
God. They're bad.
She's like, I don't understand.
How old are these
why
tweets?
There was a world war they're not that Hitler old. When he just had different opinions.
They're not
Jews.
That old at all. They came out in 2020? Oh my God.
Yeah.
You didn't see her George Floyd takes or her vaccine takes?
You could almost make the case based on those tweets that she put out and also what the movie is, that the people who made this movie with an actual intent for it to be anti-trans.
I think there's a lot in the movie that feels actively anti-trans.
Yeah. Just like how can you not know that those were her tweets before bringing her on? You know what I'm saying? Like you see this, you know? So it's like a full scope. It's like this is what trans people say and think.
Yeah.
You know?
To me, I don't know. I do not know if you know, the team knew what those tweets were. But I did say to my wife while watching the movie, like, I don't get why everyone signed onto this. After seeing the tweets, I get why she signed onto this, but I'm not quite sure why everyone's celebrating it. Like why Zoe and then I said, Zoe, she was perfectly fine going in black in blacker face as
true.
Nina. And so I get why she signed onto this, you know, but I don't quite get why everybody is here, you know.
It's also crazy there wasn't another single trans character in this movie.
Yeah.
Like we move in packs. There's 90% of trans people I know are like in a polycule with eight other trans people. Like
there's absolutely zero trans joy in this movie.
None.
I don't. Zero.
Yeah. There's the one moment where she looks at her new vagina in a pocket mirror.
Yeah. I think the people signed on to this because they're ignorant.
Yeah. This is crazy that these tweets came out so late into the awards season. It's also insane that nobody from her team or Netflix, like there were no PR people that were like, let's go back. Every time anything kind of happens to me where I'm like, well, let me go back and make sure I can delete anything that I'm saying about the Oscars or anything like, I just mean like movie opinions. I want deleted, not, let alone, you know, like,
I wonder must if, be. This
time. Oh, go ahead.
No, I wonder if they did not think this was going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, clearly not.
In their defense, I think there's no reason to expect that your transgender lead actor would get any scrutiny whatsoever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And she didn't for quite a long time. It seems like
long time.
Yeah.
People also must be figuring out like how to look at a now deleted tweet, right? Like people are like looking at our internet archives and stuff like that. And
I think these were up.
Oh, they were still
up. Alive.
Yeah, they were up. She deleted them after.
Ridiculous.
But it wasn't like this person had to do whatever you have to do to find the stuff that's been deleted, which I think is much, much harder. And I don't think like somebody would really have to be coming after
this
you.
May be the last canceled person, right? Like seeing with the direction
she's not canceled.
She said she was. If you were up for best actress, and now they're like not even talking about you anymore, like that's canceling. You know, that's the whole thing.
I guess so. There's a distancing.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much. Sorry. I know you have to go. So
I do have to go, but there's I wish I'd saved it. There's one specific thing she says that some news articles frame as her comparing like her experience being transgender to the experience of Black Americans to prove she's not racist. I don't think it's what she's doing. I think it's pretty clear that she's actually talking about her experience right now being canceled for her tweets is like equivalent to Black people in America being forced to sit at the back of the bus. Mm-hmm. And just thought, you know, this podcast might find that interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Wild. I mean, I guess it's sadly not surprising that I'm sorry. I literally was just looking up this all now and I was like, oh, wait. So anyway,
but that's the that's the age old thing, right?
This is what happens. Yeah.
Like
this is what happens.
You know, and it's making the direct parallel to, you know, experiencing any kind of injustice and then being like, didn't we march for this? You know, like, didn't we march so that I can
she doesn't even have
so that
to.
I
She's
can
trans.
Say my racist tweets or whatever it is.
This is the whole Lou's point about, I mean, didn't use the word, but about like intersectionality, identity, having multiple layers. And, you know, like the idea that one person, like you were saying, Sarah, just because they are part of a marginalized group does not automatically make them a good person.
It's just an unforced error. Look, if I'm ever canceled and I need to defend it in some wild ass way, I'm going to be like, this is like when the fucking Nazis burned the Institute of Sexology in Berlin. I'm not going to compare myself. Why use any other? I've got one.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for guesting on the podcast. Is there anything you'd like to plug? Can people follow you anywhere? Sarah, would you like to go first?
Sure. Yeah. I'm off social media because, guys, it's fascist out there these days. You can still follow me on Substack, sarahkaplan.substack.com. I know Substack is still a safe haven for Nazis, but I'm an improviser, so I got to have something. And you can see me perform at UCB here in Los Angeles.
Amazing. And Lou?
You can see me perform at UCB in New York. And sometimes when I visit Los Angeles, in Los Angeles.
Lou, did you do Gay by Play last year?
I did do Gay by Play last year.
I was in that show. Okay.
Yes, you were. You're so funny. I'm going to try to see if I can do it the next time I visit. So look out for that. I used to have an Instagram that was fairly popular, but Instagram deleted it. And so now I have a new one. Yeah, because fascism. I was sharing too much about Palestine. Anyways, my new Instagram, which I'm still sharing stuff about Palestine, come for me, Lugan Jr. At Instagram.
Amazing. You can follow us at Blackman Podcast on Twitter or X and Instagram. I don't know why we're still on X. Blackmanpodcast.com is our website. We have a Patreon that helps keep this show free. It's $5 a month. We have a bunch of episodes on there. So, you know, if you have the funds and want to support, that's a great way to do it. Also, I am at John Braylock and I perform at Herald Night as well in UCB. James?
RuleOfThreeInc.com is my website. I am currently purging my social media.
Oh no.
So I'm still on Instagram and X right now, but I'm trying to figure out what my next steps are gonna be. So
that's what you meant. I thought you meant in the way Carlo Gascon should have.
No. But I'm like, I gotta go do, I think there's definitely even this stuff I get kind of scared about, but
yeah.
I feel like when it's like universally accepted, it's more okay.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
I don't think I'll be doing any films with Jacques on the art anytime soon. So anywho, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you again for guessing. And we will see you in 2 weeks. Peace.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.